Is this actually working? Are we actually broadcasting over the radio? This is amazing. Okay, we're down here at the Puck Building, which is downtown Manhattan on the corner of Houston Street and Lafayette, with a special edition of Off the Hook. Off the Hook is a radio show that comes your way every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock on WBAI 99.5 FM. The only kind of radio station I think that would broadcast this kind of material, and I'm very glad to be in the same city with such a station, and I hope a lot of people come away from this conference with a sense that radio can be a very interesting medium if done properly. We've got a really interesting show tonight. We're on for 2 hours talking about hacking, technology, telephones, computers, all kinds of neat things like that. The conference here goes for another day after this one. We're sort of going through the night doing all kinds of fun things. And if you have a chance to come down to the conference, please do, because we'll be here tomorrow as well. I'd like to introduce our co-host for tonight, a hacker who has been around for many years, who has been sent to prison for his crime of hacking, Mr. Fiber Optic. Good evening, Fiber.
Good evening, Emmanuel.
Oh, this is different than our usual radio show where we're sitting in a studio with a couple of people. We have several hundred people here now.
Yeah, we actually have an audience.
Yeah, and they're all here. We're actually going to try to take phone calls, too. We have a special telephone number, so those of you who are listening on the radio tonight, don't call the usual number because it won't work. Well, it will work, but it won't go here. We can only do so many things, and routing the phones to go over here was one of the things we couldn't do.
Well, not anymore, anyway.
Why don't we give the folks here an idea of what we usually talk about during the radio show? Why this radio show is different than most other ones? I'll pretend I didn't hear that. This microphone sounds terrible, doesn't it? Okay. I'm going to get rid of this microphone. Is this any better? All right. Okay. You know, that microphone would sound a lot better if we put one of these little things on top of it. That'd be very nice. So maybe the microphone maintenance people can take care of that. Now, Fiber, we're usually here every Tuesday night, and we talk about computer hacking. We talk about the latest exploits, who's been sent to prison recently. And I don't know, we just have a lot of fun. A lot of non-hackers take part in the show, too. They call up and they ask all kinds of questions. And I think there's a real interest there about what the things that we do.
I think you're right. I kind of think of ourselves as the Ralph Naders of hacker radio. But then again, there really isn't any other hacker radio, is there?
Well, not really, not to speak of. We've tended to wander into the realm of consumer advocacy. We started doing a radio show just about, you know, how to play around with telephones, what a red box can do, what a blue box can do, that kind of thing. And we sort of wound up venturing into the world of phone company ripoffs, the things that 9X does that wind up cheating consumers. And we have a very large following of people that really don't know that much about computers or phones, but do know a lot about consumer issues. And I think it's interesting that hackers can actually provide that kind of a service to people who don't really have that much of an interest in the technology themselves. So I think that's kind of cool. Something about the conference, we've had quite a few interesting talks already. We have a lot more to go. We're not even at the halfway point yet. We've got a rave going on later tonight that a lot of people are going to wander over to. All kinds of other activities in New York City. So if you see weird stuff going on in New York City, it's probably us. There have been all kinds of signs up about this thing, stickers all over the city. So people know about this. I think this is probably the biggest hacker event ever. And considering that we're linked to another hacker conference that's taking place at the exact same time over in Holland, known as the Hacking in Progress Conference, or HIP, they're going on the exact same time as us right now. Hopefully they're hearing this program right now, too, over Real Audio, or maybe over the special setup that we have with PictureTel. PictureTel is allowing us to use ISDN lines to transmit a video signal and audio signal to them and from them. It hasn't quite worked totally yet, but they have gotten some panels of ours. We've been able to see them moving around over there in Holland, and it's new technology, and it's fascinating, and one day I'm sure it'll be a lot easier to use. But if they're over there listening to us now, let's extend a big hearty welcome to our friends in Holland. For those of you who want to hear the show, or obviously I can't tell you this if you're not already listening and you're out of range, but if you go to, what website are we giving to people? Hope.net? Or, okay, I think it's www.notwork.net is the address that we're giving. That's what I was told. www.notwork.net. If you go to that website, you'll see a link to listen to this on Real Audio, so you can try that as well. Okay, we've got a star-studded lineup tonight of all kinds of people from the hacker world, and we ran a little late before. We had Brock Meeks give a really dynamite speech at the beginning of the conference. We had Bruce Schneier with his cryptography session. We had the Loft. We had some other really interesting people, Steve Rombaum, a private investigator. And the result of all that fascinating stuff was that we wound up moving later and later than we wanted to be. And so one of the panels that we were really looking forward to, the media panel, where we have some people from the media up on stage and hackers wind up asking them questions, well, that's sort of been moved into this show. So we're going to be having those people on the show in just a little bit, and you can ask them questions as well as the listeners will be able to ask them questions in addition. First, though, I'd like to introduce a very special guest. How many of you out there have had some of those major hacking cookies? Aren't they amazing? We found these cookies in a 7-Eleven out on the east end of Long Island, and it was just amazing. We looked at them and we said, wow, you know, we're hackers, and this is major hacking, like a major hack. It was like really kind of cosmic. And then we had the cookies, and they were really good. So we said, what a great combination. We can bring these cookies to a hacker convention, and everybody's going to love them. But what we never thought we'd be able to pull off was to get Major Hacking himself to come to this conference. Major Hacking is here. Let's give a round of applause to Mr. Major Hacking. Now, you are an actual major, which is why you're referred to as Major Hacking, correct?
Oh, yes. Join the war, you mean?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yes, I joined the service in, 1938. Uh-huh. I came out. I was in the service for 10 years.
Uh-huh.
And then I came over to Long Island in 1972 or thereabouts. And my wife and I had been in the restaurant business all those years after the war. And until 3 years ago, we had two restaurants. And finally, it became too much for me to operate two restaurants, so we came out of it. And we now went into the wholesale business. So I got some recipes from my mother and her grandfather and all sorts of people. And we started making these large cookies, and we've now been doing it for 2.5 years, and I'm happy to say that the ball is beginning to roll very fast indeed.
I think now that the hacking community has discovered you, I think the ball's going to roll a lot faster.
Yeah.
Now, your last name is Hacking. Can you tell us something about the lineage of Hacking as a name?
No, it's a Lancashire name, an English name, of course. In just outside Liverpool, it's quite a common name, Hacking, I-N-G.
Did you guys know that?
Yeah.
That Hacking is a common name in England?
Yeah.
I don't think anybody here knew that. So it's a common name in England and Lancashire?
No, in the north of England only.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a common name there.
Now, does it have a meaning? Does the name itself have a meaning?
Well, no. I always think of it as a hacking cock or a hacking jacket or something like that.
Uh-huh. Now, tell us something about the war. How did you become a major?
Well, I went off to Dunkirk, of course, in Europe, and then came back again, went to North Africa, was slowly upgraded to a subaltern, and then became a captain, went to North Africa to fight Rommel.
Mm-hmm.
Then went over to India and worked with Mountbatten in Trincomalee, in Ceylon, and then I finished building a pipeline over the hump, over the Himalayas into China. And then eventually I came home. I was tired. I only got wounded once. Yeah. So we now, after retiring and working pretty hard, we now start work at about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and we finish about 8 o'clock at night baking cookies and packing them and selling them and delivering them. And so it's quite fun. But I feel rather privileged to be in this conference, and I think the thing that's most impressive, apart from the fact that the technology is way, way, way above my head, is the informality and the camaraderie that goes on between everybody. And I feel, my wife and I both feel very privileged to have been asked to join you. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, it's a real privilege to have had you here, and we wish you most success in your business ventures ahead, and hopefully major hacking cookies pretty much are a Long Island phenomenon now. Maybe after this conference it can be a national phenomenon or international.
Well, if we could find the right sort of people and the right distributor.
I think you have.
We'd like to find somebody who could handle the western end of Long Island, in other words, New York City.
Yes.
It's very hard to find reliable people.
We still consider New York City to be the western part of Long Island, so. As far as the cookie business, is there any plans for expansion? How many different flavors do you have? We have 3 of them here.
Well, the cookie as such is very, very commonplace, but 99% of those cookies that one sees in the stores, I think, are commercially made, whereas ours are the original recipes, and they're still handmade. They're not made by machinery at all. They're mixed, obviously, by machine, but they're handmade, hand-pressed, hand-packed.
We got several thousand of them. That's a lot of hands where I work over the last week.
It's a product totally apart from an internationally known name like Nabisco or something like mm-hmm. that. It's a home product as opposed to a big commercial operation. But it's mm-hmm. growing pretty fast, so great. We probably need more bodies to help us.
Were you aware of computer hackers at any time?
Down a little bit further down the road.
Uh-huh.
It's a bit, we're too young to do that yet.
Yeah.
And I don't think it would be pretty good if we could get together in one way or another. It'd be quite something, really, to join a very complex industry like yours is mm-hmm. with a relatively simple one like mine is.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you very much for being here, and best of luck to you with Major Hacking.
Not at all. It's been a great pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
Major John Hacking. Our next guest comes also from overseas, and he has come here more recently from overseas, as in a couple of days ago. You may have heard the name Cyber Junkie whispered in fear. In many highly placed government agencies. Cyber Junkie is one of Britain's most notorious hackers, I guess. It's very easy to become a notorious hacker these days. Ladies and gentlemen, Cyber Junkie.
Hi, it's great to be here.
So what do you think of this conference here?
So far, it's been pretty good. We've got one conference in the UK, but it's pretty small. It's a pretty small conference, the one in the UK, but this is, like, huge. It's great. Everyone I've met here has been really good. Everything I've seen going on here has been really good, and everything I've taken part in has been good and strange.
Uh-huh. Sorry, I was distracted for a moment. All kinds of weird things are going on here. So now, you've been to this country before, correct?
Yeah, I only came over when I was really young. It's like the first time to be here when I've been able to participate in everything that this country's got to offer.
Is there a different kind of mood that you see with regards to computer hackers here as overseas? Are people more paranoid there? Are we more paranoid here?
Yeah, it's a lot more laid back over here. Computer hackers tend to stick together a lot more. We've got a fairly cohesive society over in the UK, but everyone tends to keep their heads down pretty well and do things by themselves, really.
What is the hacker scene like over there? Has it been growing by leaps and bounds over the last few years with your hacker conferences?
Yeah, it has been. 2600 meetings have really sort of like increased quite a lot. I don't know how many more you've received and got in your magazine for the UK, but there's certainly quite a lot. There's the two main ones in Manchester and London, and we're seeing now like 20, 30 people at some of those, which is quite nice to talk to and quite nice to see. A few conferences have been starting up. Access All Areas is the main one, but it's still pretty small scale. I can really see why everyone says the UK is just a couple of years behind the US.
Okay, sorry, I was distracted again. A lot of distractions going on when you have hundreds of people around. Now, we were together over the winter in Manchester. There was a special 2600 meeting there. There has been Access All Areas. Right now there's the HIP conference overseas. This is the second HOPE conference. Hacking seems to become more of a worldwide phenomenon. It's spreading.
Yeah, I think hacking's always been a worldwide phenomenon. I mean, certainly you tend to sort of like skip countries when you go through machines, but we're just starting to come together. People are starting to recognize that hackers are actually useful people to know. We can actually do things with computers that university-trained people can only dream of.
Mm-hmm. What is your expertise? What do you like playing with the most?
I guess you could say I'm a jack of all trades, but I tend to prefer playing with Unix systems. I've dabbled with the phones. I've dabbled with NT. I hate NT. It's good to see a lot of people agree with me.
Okay, how many other people came here from England for this conference?
There's a couple of others. There's Zap, there's Gorf, and there's Tom. All of whom are fairly well-known and fairly well-respected hackers from the UK. Talents sort of like range fairly widely. Tom's sort of a bit more into the phone system, although he has talents in other areas as well. Zap's a fairly good hacker, as is Gorf.
Tom is one of the most knowledgeable hackers I've met on the subject of GSM phones, which is something that Fiber and he will be doing a panel on later tonight. And, you know, if there are two people that know more about GSM phones, I'd like to meet them because I think we're getting them both together here tonight. There's a lot of knowledge to be spread around. Now, you guys have had GSM over there for a long time.
Yeah, it's been around, but due to the tariffs that GSM charges and due to the crap service they provide, no one tends to stick with them.
What are the phone companies like over there, British Telecom? I mean, I know you haven't had much of a chance to check out 9X or AT&T or Bell Atlantic or any of those companies, but, the overall attitude towards the phone company there, do you think it's similar to our, I don't know, how would you describe the way we think of phone companies here? We don't really like them that much. We think they're big, plodding idiots. I don't know. Is that the same over there?
I think our attitude towards British Telecom is sort of the same as everybody's attitude towards Microsoft. British Telecom, until recently, had a pretty large monopoly over everything. And as a result, their tariffs were, like, huge. I mean, in the US, everyone takes for granted things like free local off peak phone calls. In the UK, we had it for about a couple of weeks until the provider decided that there was too many people calling ISPs and so they should stop it. It's the way it's been. It's starting to change now. There's more companies popping up. My telco actually at the moment is 9X and they're a hell of a lot cheaper than BT. it's easy to see why everyone's moving to them.
Well, speaking firsthand as someone who's been prosecuted by British Telecom, I think they're a bunch of stupid wankers.
How hard is it to get on the net over there? I mean, are there a lot of providers that will just, you know, allow you to get on? Or is it, when I was over there, everybody was having trouble maintaining a connection. You had to pay for every minute, and it was a real hardship.
How hard is it to get on to the net over here? I mean, it's not that hard to make an international telephone call these days, is it? You know, we've got quite a few providers. They're popping up all over the place. I guess the average price is probably about $8 or $9 a month plus your local phone call. So £8 or £9, that is, which is about, what, $12, $13. It's online charges for, like, per minute. The only people who do that are things like CompuServe, and everyone steers clear of them anyway.
Well, it's good to know some things transcend the Atlantic Ocean. Do you have AOL over there?
Yeah, we also have UK Online. And everyone steers clear of them, too.
Wow. Okay, we have Bernie S. with us, who has slunk onto stage without me even seeing him. Welcome, Bernie S. Bernie, you are actually in New York. This is the first time in years that we've talked to you face-to-face. We've heard that the hell you've gone through, it went out over this radio station, and I think a lot of what happened on this radio station helped to get the Secret Service to eventually back off. It's good to have you here in New York City.
Thanks. I think the people listening to the show played a big part in my eventual release, and might have saved my life without being too exaggerating in what's going on.
Very briefly, for those people that were in a coma for the last couple of years may not have known what happened to you. If you could tell people over the course of those 2 years what happened and how it turned out.
Well, during my, I guess it was a total of 14 months I spent in prison for possessing ordinary hardware and software without any allegation I'd misused it in any way. I went through five maximum security prisons, and off the hook was with me all the way. One of the worst parts of the prison experience is the isolation, and I'm sure Fiber can relate to that also. You feel very constrained, and you are constrained, and you're, for someone who's used to being able to have access to all kinds of communications resources, to have virtually none except an occasional collect phone call. Having access to Off the Hook and its listeners and the support that its listeners provided me by writing and calling in and writing me a lot of letters while I was incarcerated was a godsend. It really kept me going to know that there were a lot of people out there who gave a damn about what was going on. And I owe a lot of people a lot of gratitude for following it and supporting me, because I don't know if I could have done it by myself. It was a tough road to hoe.
I just want to say I think it's amazing that you were able to stay sane after all of that, after them putting you in the hole with murderers, rapists, people like that. You know, when they were accusing you of having technology that could be used in a fraudulent way to make a free phone call, and that's enough to throw somebody in jail for a year. Obviously, selective prosecution, somebody with a grudge that wanted to lock you away, someone very powerful in the Secret Service that was able to do this. I don't know many people that could have come out of this and not feel completely bitter, to be totally screwed up in one way or another. I think in that sense, you're a real inspiration to all of us, and I want to thank you for holding your head up.
We should probably talk a little bit about Fiverr's experience, too. His was no picnic, either.
Yeah, Fiverr, briefly, you could tell us the experience you went through, because that also, this radio show also followed you into prison back in 1994. In fact, during the first Hope conference, Fiverr Optic was in jail. We weren't able to have him here. This is his first conference, first time he's ever been to a hacker conference. And we actually heard from him live on the phone on the second day of that conference. And it was really thrilling to be able to have him converse with people who were at that at a particular seminar then. So it's good to welcome you to New York as well, even though you live here.
The funny thing I remember about that point in time was I had actually typed up a really short speech because I was really nervous about what I was going to say. And then it turned out that we pre-recorded my speech anyway.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was that I had to sneak into the library to use a typewriter, which is only meant to be used for typing up legal documents. You just can't use a typewriter if you wanted to. So I snuck in the library and I managed to type up this little note of a speech and read it to Emmanuel while he was recording it. And the whole thing is just really ridiculous. It's really hard to describe or explain to people so that they can understand the really insane rules that actually are enforced in prison. It's not like you see on television. It's not like you see in the movies. It's just really peculiar. It's a very strange place, and I really hope that nobody in the audience ever has to go through an experience like me or Bernie went through, and if you have, you know what I'm talking about.
We're going to have a special prisoner panel tomorrow night that will have fiber optic, Bernie S., and a confirmed guest that we just found out about, Len Rose, who was through Living Hell as well a few years ago. He was sent to prison for having a copy of a computer program that AT&T said was there. It's very valuable. Yeah, okay. It's really, I mean, when you know what it is that we're talking about, it's funny. For those people out there that have no conception of what this means, it might sound like, you know, somebody who has a computer program, they're preventing AT&T from using it, and it's not that at all. They, you know, having a file does not mean that they don't have the file. You know, files are meant to be copied. That's always how I've looked at it. And people should not go to prison for having a copy of a file. Maybe I'm just weird. I don't know. This is a special edition of Off the Hook. You're listening to WBAI in New York. We're going to take a very brief break, and when we return, we'll be talking with a private investigator who scared a lot of people earlier today with his knowledge. And we'll be back with all kinds of other special guests as well. Stay tuned. Okay. Are we on the air? Okay, great. Well, that was an interesting break, wasn't it? Studio engineer, are you there? I think we have studio engineers. I don't know. Maybe we're coasting on momentum. But, we needed that break anyway. Okay, this is a special edition of Off the Hook on WBAI. We're broadcasting this program throughout the New York metropolitan area. We have a large group of people here in the Puck Building downtown, on the corner of Houston and Lafayette. You're welcome to come down and join us. We'll be here all night tonight and into tomorrow, late into tomorrow, talking about all kinds of other hacking issues. We have a huge network that we've set up here with a 10 megabit connection to the Internet. Now, Fiber, maybe you could tell us, what does that mean?
That means you have a kick-ass, slamming, fast connection.
That's good. considering
that's the technical term for it.
Considering the last time We had one of these things. We had a 28-8 connection. How much faster would you say we are now?
Well, let's see. If we were to do the math, we'd have to divide 28,800 into 10 million.
You can do that, can't you?
A lot.
It's a lot faster.
Okay. Is everybody happy with the network out there? Well, that's a first for a hacker convention, isn't it? Usually we can't keep the connection up at all. So let's give a hand to Marco, who helped organize the whole network. Well, this person who has just ventured onto the stage has quite a history in the hacker world. Veggie, welcome to New York.
Hello.
And where are you living these days?
You're in San Francisco.
You used to be in Boston, though.
Yes.
But now you've moved out to the West Coast to establish a presence there.
Magic.
What kinds of things? You're in a hacker group known as CDC.
Cult of the Dead Cow.
Cult of the Dead Cow. Tell us something about the Cult of the Dead Cow.
Cult of the Dead Cow is the oldest active hacker group. We've been around since 1984.
1984.
Celebrating 13 years of the candle in the darkness.
Wow. What kinds of things have you done in those 13 years?
Global domination.
Sorry?
Global domination.
Well, global domination.
We invented the e-zine.
Okay.
Invented the e-zine. 335 issues so far. So now, right now in San Francisco, we're working on starting up a New Hack City West.
Tell us something about what New Hack City is.
New Hack City was a house actually with a lab, a computer lab in the basement that we worked on. And since a lot of us have ended up moving out to the West Coast, we're starting some up similar. We're not going to live there, but it's going to be like a loft area type place.
Uh-huh. Hey, you have a panel tomorrow. Is there anything you want to tell us about what's upcoming, or is that going to be a surprise?
It'll be a surprise.
Okay, it's going to be a big surprise because I know what it is. And that's tomorrow. What time did we say that was?
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock p.m. So those of you who go out to the rave tonight.
Sunday, 3 yeah. p.m.
Oh, boy. This is fun. We have more people, lots of people that want to be on the radio show tonight. We only have 2 hours. It sounds like a lot of time, but it goes pretty fast. We're almost at the one-hour point. We're on until 8:30, and we have more things going on tonight. So I want to bring on our next guest from Hackers.org, Mike Rodancer, involved in all kinds of legal issues. Welcome to Off the Hook. So tell us something about your organization and what you've been involved in over the years.
Hackers.org, actually I have these two illustrious gentlemen to thank for, actually all three of them to thank for giving me the idea. They didn't give it to me personally, it was what they went through at the hands of the injustice system that kind of brought the issue to head about legal defense for people who are basically not able to pay for it. And what we usually find is that most of these cases, the government agency comes in, intimidates other people into either signing confessions or whatever. They just basically bully them. And the only reason that they get away with it is because the person doesn't have the means to come back and put together a proper defense. So what we're doing is we're creating a pool of people who want, or actually of lawyers who want to cut into this new into the laws, just basically create precedents out there, and we say, fine, we'll give you cases, you just have to do it pro bono. Most of them agree on that, and if they don't, well, we just don't use them.
Have you had much response from groups like ACLU, EFF? Epic.
We won't get into.
Oh, come on, you can get into it.
Our friends at the EFF.
Let's not talk about non-response here.
Really?
If there was a response from these organizations, then we wouldn't need to exist. Actually, it's really sorry to say that.
You don't have anything nice to say.
Why do these organizations exist then? Are these organizations there to protect our rights?
They are in theory. It's a great idea. It's just whether or not it's actually in practice. That's the big question right now.
I think the ACLU and the EFF have done a lot, but it seems like, especially with the EFF, that they've changed very much from when they first started out. You know, they started out as very much a grassroots organization.
They've become more, it's the popular law, okay? It's a popular case. If it's a big case, they'll take it. If it's not such a big case, there was a gentleman who was in a wheelchair out in Colorado. Okay, the police department out there basically walked in, confiscated all of his equipment without so much. I mean, barely, pretty much a bogus search warrant. Okay, this guy doesn't have. This isn't one of those big cases that you'll see on CNN or anything like that with a lot of media coverage. So, who wants to cover it? Well, that's the reason we're around, and it's not one of those deals where we're walking up and going, okay, now, you know, we're going to take on boatloads worth of cases. Our resources right now are very limited. I have to do most of the walking around and trying to enroll the legal help into this. But the cases that we do take on, they're the smaller cases. They're the ones that you don't probably hear about. You won't read about them in a paper. You won't see me on CNN unless they do it without my permission again like they did a couple months ago. But they're cases nonetheless, and they're people nonetheless. And they're people that have been basically wrongly accused, shoved around by the system because the system says, okay, we've got the backing of either the federal or state government, lots of money, and you don't have jack.
Aren't you concerned about being overwhelmed with people who have such cases? How do you decide who to take, who not to take?
Right now we've got a number of cases that we don't have legal help for, and it's one of those things that weighs really heavy on me because of the fact that when that comes up, it's I'm starting to beat the bushes out there. I just came off of traveling basically across the United States about 3 or 4 times during my regular job, and while I was doing that, I was also beating the bushes for HDF. And some cases, I mean, we've managed to secure the legal assistance. In some cases, we haven't. And it's unfortunate right now that some cases we just can't help with.
Manuel, who's that guy in prison in Texas who keeps getting into trouble and writing in from jail?
Minor Threat.
Yeah, maybe we should hook Minor Threat up with this guy.
Well, you've heard of the Minor Threat case.
Yes.
Yeah. Minor Threat actually is one of the first people to have gotten this restriction on the Internet as part of his sentencing guidelines. For his supervised release. When he gets out of prison, whenever that is, sometime I think in 2001, even though his crime had nothing to do with computers, I think it had to do with, do you know what it was? It was
I wasn't totally briefed on
it. It was breaking and entering, I think.
Right.
And stealing phone equipment or something like that. Correct me if I'm wrong. But because it's got some nebulous connection to technology, when he gets out of prison, he is not allowed to use a computer or be on the Internet or anything like that.
Is it not to use a computer and not use the Internet?
I think the Internet was mentioned specifically. I'm not sure if he's completely restricted from using a computer.
What I've seen in a lot of these cases is that either the state, local, or federal government comes in. They've got somebody who, in the prosecution, that goes and throws out a whole bunch of technical terms that soars right over the head of the judge, but the judge does comprehend that, oh, this guy is somehow a threat. Okay, that's about all he sees. And they dish out this insane, as I refer to it, is injustice. We have a lot of legal help, a lot of judges out there who just don't understand how computers work. Most of them don't even know where the on switch is on some of these things, you know. And we need to educate them.
But at the same time, when you have people in power who are somewhat educated about computers, you have things like the Clipper chip that come up where they want to control it. They want to close off access to encryption. I mean, I felt a lot safer, crazy as this may sound, under Reagan Bush when they didn't know anything about computers and they didn't try to legislate computers. Now when Clinton came along, all of a sudden everything has to be restricted, rated, regulated in some way. And, you know, I just wish you'd leave it alone.
That's the ignorance in action there.
As far as judges' ignorance, I think nobody is more qualified than Bernie S. to speak about that a little bit. What kind of ignorant things have you heard judges say when sentencing you?
I can put most of that out of my mind, Manuel. But what I've seen happen, and not just my case, but other cases, where the crime itself is pretty not inconsequential, where there might be no victims involved, certainly no one is harmed, those sorts of things. What federal agents, or in some cases state or local law enforcement officials, will do is, instead of address the specifics of the crime, quote, crime, end quote, at hand, is they'll bring in all this other extraneous stuff that really has nothing to do with the what's referred to as the instant offense, in order to demonize the defendant. In my case, I mentioned this last night, I was charged with possession of a touch-tone dialer that had been modified with a different crystal in it, and I was charged with possession of a IBM laptop computer, you can buy at any computer store, and a copy of computer software, which was purchased commercially, that allowed someone to program, that would allow you to program a cellular phone. The software, by the way, did not allow you to change, did not allow you to obtain someone else's electronic serial number to steal someone else's service. The software had no ability to do that, but that got lost in the translation. In any case, the Secret Service, in my case, trotted out a list of book titles that I had. I had a library of about 2,000 books I collected over the years, some really unusual and some ominous-sounding titles, and some of them are pretty ambiguous, or not ambiguous, but just harmless stuff. When they brought up the fact that I had some titles on how explosives are made, I bought those. I was just curious about that topic. I had more books on bird watching than I did about building bombs. But in any case, titles like that were read off to the judge. In fact, I was held without bail in federal court by a strange coincidence. I was brought to federal court just exactly a week after the Oklahoma City bombing, and the Secret Service drove me to the federal courthouse, and just as we started to pull in the building, there was a bomb threat, because there were a lot of copycat bomb threats right after the bombing. And 2 hours, for 2 hours, the whole federal court building had to be evacuated in Philadelphia. So 2 hours later, they get me in there in handcuffs and shackles before the judge.
Very dangerous.
What's that?
Very dangerous.
Oh, yeah. And as stated by the Secret Service, I was a danger in that I had books about bombs and explosives in my house. And, maybe two or three out of 2,000 copies of different books. With that, the judge, who had just finished coming back into his courtroom after evacuating it for 2 hours because of a bomb threat a week after another federal building was obliterated, he took his glasses off, looked at me, and said, "No bail." So, and that had nothing to do with the charge at hand. So you see this. Another instance was the Secret Service said they found a material in my home they believe was C4 plastic explosives, which turned out to be dental putty. The owner of the house I was renting, who was deceased, his father was deceased, he owned the house previously, was a dentist, and he had all these dental supplies in the basement. Well, the Secret Service twice in sentencing hearings said, "Well, Your Honor, the Secret Service found a material we believe to be C4 plastic explosives in his house." Pause, And while upon analysis it turned out not to be C4, the fact that it might have been concerns us greatly. And, these are the kinds of exaggerations and things that are brought into these kinds of cases that don't involve any victims at all, that are used to demonize the defendant, and has nothing to do with the case at all. If the government had to stick to just the facts about the case alone, they'd look like fools that they're bringing these things to attention. So there's nothing you can do about it. They're allowed to bring this stuff in to to bring up the dangerousness of a defendant, and they will lie and exaggerate to their heart's content.
I just want to say at this point that we're going to try to take phone calls here at the Puck Building. We have a special phone number for those people out there listening that want to call in, but we only have one phone line, so it's not going to be like the usual thing. But I know Rebel's not going to call in this time because he's here. Those of you who listen to the radio show, you'll know what I mean by that. The number, well, actually, let's do this. I'm going to pick up this phone. Will I be able to get a dial tone if I do that? Okay, we're going to pick this up. This dial tone, great. This is an ISDN line, by the way. We're going to dial 958 and hear what number we have. Well, what do you know?
Oh, she was in a hurry.
She was in a hurry.
Wonderful techno.
So if you heard that number out there, dial that number, call us, and we should see a little flashing light here, and we'll see if anybody is actually listening. Yeah, the light's flashing.
Hey, look at that. Wow.
Okay, let's take our first phone call. Why do I hear a dial tone? I haven't picked up the phone yet. Okay, I'm going to pick it up. Hello?
You're off the hook.
Okay, yeah, we are. Okay, I think I understand how the phone works now. Okay, let's give that number out again.
It's a block by the federal government.
8268. Somebody was calling, though, because I saw the little light flashing. That's 212-343-8268, if there's any listeners out there. We usually have 10 phone lines, and they all light up at once. Now, they're hot air.
Wow.
Whoa.
That's really cool.
That's ring bulb.
Answer the phone.
That's what it's all about, folks.
Quick, get out the blue box.
I like that. Okay, let's see who's here.
Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello. How are you?
Okay, can we hear them?
Okay. What's on your mind?
Sorry?
What's on your mind?
I just wanted to talk with you.
Okay, well, here I am. Right.
Okay. We have another call. We have another call, I believe. Yes, I think I hear the phone.
Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yeah, hi there. Emmanuel?
Yes, here I am.
Yeah, hi there. My name is Mark.
Can you turn down your voice a little bit?
Okay, I've been having some problems recently with, you know when you dial the number of, the people who've been calling you?
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm talking about, the number you dial up on the phone?
Yes, I think I do.
Well, what's that called?
I'm sorry?
Well, what's that called?
What's that called when...
Well, you know, if someone calls you and you ain't there to get the call.
When someone calls you and you're not there to get the call.
And then you dial it and they tell you their number.
Tells you that's called caller ID.
That's right. That's what it is.
Fiber optic knows all about that.
You can dial star 69.
Well, you can dial star 69 too and also hear the last person that called you. In fact,
we may do that
to you after this phone call.
Now, when I was doing that the other day, it came up all nines.
All nines, huh?
It's Monday.
All nines. There you go.
Okay, well, if you get the CD-ROM, you'll hear Monty calling us a few months ago. I'm going to... let's see what happens right now, Star 69.
Actually, I don't think you're going to be able to do it.
Well, let's try it. Okay. That's what hacking is all about. Trying and failing. Oh. Might be his phone ringing.
The number you're trying to call may not be reached by this method. If you know the telephone number, please dial it direct.
Well, I guess we can't call him back on this phone, but let's see if we can take another phone call. I just may get one of these in my house.
I love that.
That's so cool.
Now, you could hear that through the house.
Hello?
Okay, that person was just belching into the phone. It's weird. I don't know. The silly people seem to have the speed dials. Okay, so we try one more. 212-343-8268. See if we can get a sensible person on the line. Anyone out there that's going to call us with a sensible question? I like the sound of this one. Let's see who's there.
Good evening. You're on. Hello?
Okay, we'll go to the phones later. How do we turn this off? I can always just yank the thing out. Okay, it's off?
Thank you.
All right. We have an interesting panel of people here. We have more people to bring on. Special Investigator Steve Rombon gave a talk earlier. How many of you saw that? Well, guess what? He's back. And He's ready to go on the radio with a brief synopsis of what we were talking about earlier as far as investigating people, learning all kinds of information that I guess we don't realize is out there. This guy's been on 60 Minutes. He's been investigating war criminals in Canada, Hamas, you name it. He's been out there digging into people's lives and finding out all kinds of interesting factual information. And there's only room for... we could share a microphone with him, I guess. Is he here? Okay, that's fine. Steve Armbon, ladies and gentlemen. Got all the t-shirts, right?
Got my free t-shirt.
Good.
Yeah, but he wouldn't buy a CDC t-shirt.
Who said that?
So tell us something about the private eye business. What is it exactly that you do? Why were you on 60 Minutes? I was on 60 Minutes too, you know. Did you meet Mike Wallace?
Yes, I do.
Isn't he, weird?
I think he's just getting old.
What is that thing on his chin? You know, he scared me. He really did.
You're going to get me in trouble here.
Oh. He's always looking for a scam. Well, he must have given you good press. He gave us bad press. He wanted something bad to say about us. At first, he was asking us about, you know, bestiality on the net, as if we invented it. You know, I remember him telling me, "I saw donkeys. I saw them, and it was just, how can you defend this?" And I'm like, I don't care what your interests are, you know. If you're looking for something on the net, you will find it. It's the nature of free speech. And he didn't seem to be able to grasp that, but he never went with that story. He just went with the story of hackers out there meeting publicly. How can you conceive of something like this? Meeting out in the open and reading your credit report. That's what they always come at you with. They can be reading your credit report and
nobody
logging into your PC and all that kind of garbage.
Gotta go for those ratings. He actually was pretty good on our episode. He went up to Canada and a Nazi's dog bit his trench coat, his CBS-issue trench coat. So,
how did you find Nazis in Canada? How do you do that? Stop shining those lights. He knows what they're all about.
The vast majority of them we found through public access databases.
What did you do, look under Nazi? How does that work?
In the yellow pages, under war criminal, coming up. No, I mean, we had a list of names that were compiled by groups of Holocaust survivors, of people that for 40 or 50 years they had suspected were welcomed with open arms into Canada. Canada was a pretty anti-Semitic country at the end of the war, and they kept Jews out, and they allowed war criminals in because they were good white, you know, Christian stock. There were actually 2 years at the end of World War II that they brought in more former members of the SS than survivors of concentration camps. And for about 40 years, the Canadian Jewish community was asking the Canadian government for an accounting, and they refused. So now, fast forward to the modern day, when there are computer-accessible databases and phone numbers on disk and property records, we were able to do a fairly simple investigation and find 161 of these guys up there.
Were they summarily executed?
No, but that's not my choice.
They nailed their hats to their heads.
What other countries do you know of that are guilty of this?
Primarily the former Commonwealth countries. The UK, Australia, whatever.
Uh-huh.
What about South America?
South America has the reputation as being a haven for war criminals.
Argentina.
But frankly, there's more former members of the SS. There's 2,300 of them in Canada than in all of South America combined.
Shouldn't these people, you know, be dying by now, you know, dying of old age? I mean, SS people, they last forever? The war was, you know...
They definitely, it's an amazing thing, they definitely beat the actuarial tables. It's an amazing thing. I think maybe 10% of the people we looked for were deceased.
Mm-hmm. Now, give us an example of how you would find somebody. What would you go through?
You try the easiest databases first. First, you look in the phone book.
Mm-hmm.
And about a third... You have to understand, Canada has been so hospitable to these people that they were making almost no effort to hide. They feel comfortable and at home and unafraid. And of course, the proof of that is after I found them, we put together an undercover operation, and we actually went and interviewed them. And out of 160-some-odd people we tried to interview, only four of them refused to speak to us. Now, we found them in the phone books. We found them under their own names in driving records. We found them owning vehicles under their own names, property, credit reports, which really ties into what I was speaking about earlier. Keeping these databases open is to the overall benefit of the community, as opposed to closing everything.
Once you track them down, what happened after that? Are they still welcome in Canada? Or did the rules change?
It's a real shame what Canada's done. They, you know, the United States in 1979 formed the Office of Special Investigations, part of the Department of Justice that has only one task, finding these people, prosecuting them, booting them out. Since 79, the U.S. has thrown out or chased out over 100 war criminals. Canada's brought three to trial and deported one. They really don't care.
What kind of public support have you gotten?
Enormous. Of course, the organized groups up there were a little hesitant because their attitude was, you know, if this is true, how come we didn't know about it? How come if all these people were here and they're so easily found, how come the RCMP didn't find them? When we pointed out that about a third of them were in the phone book, they were stunned. There have been massive rallies up there. I was invited by 45 members of the Canadian Parliament to address them in the Parliament building, and legislation's been introduced. But as you point out, these are pretty old people, and most of them are going to cheat the hangman, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. What are the kinds of investigations that have been involved in? How do you get into this whole line of work?
Well, I'm not a Nazi hunter for a living. That's more of a hobby as opposed to bungee jumping. I'm primarily involved in missing persons investigations and what's known as multi-jurisdictional investigations. Very sophisticated financial frauds, for example, where the victim will be in one jurisdiction and the crook in another, and the phony papers will supposedly originate from another, and the money will be sent off yet to another jurisdiction. And, of course, law enforcement being law enforcement, they're not fighting for the privilege of putting another case on their caseload. In fact, everybody in each jurisdiction is guaranteed to be pointing at another jurisdiction and say, no, no, it's theirs. So we pick the most logical jurisdiction and we build the criminal case and essentially force it upon law enforcement.
Steve, we're going to take a break because we're at the halfway point. This is a special edition of Off the Hook coming to you live from the Puck Building, the Beyond Hope Conference here in the corner of House and Lafayette. You're listening to WBAI in New York. We'll be right back.
Has all been audible?
Saturday, August 9th at 6:30 p.m., tune in for a special edition of the radio show Buying About Hackers, Off the Hook, as we broadcast live from the Beyond Hope Conference. We'll have all kinds of special guests and presentations. For the first time ever, we'll have a live audience. You can join us now at the conference, which will be taking place downtown at the Puck Building on Houston and Lafayette Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, August 8th, 9th, and 10th. It's expected to be the largest gathering of hackers in history. If you can't make it down, you can still listen in. That's Off the Hook, live at Beyond Hope, on Saturday, August 9th at 6:30 p.m. on listener-supported WBAI 99.5 FM, New York.
thank you, Claude. And Claude is our engineer back at WBAI. Let's all say hi to Claude.
Hi, Claude.
He's really bummed out that he has to be up there and not down here, so hopefully he'll be able to come down later. This is a special live edition. Well, it's always live, but we don't usually do this. A special two-hour, unpacked edition of Off the Hook, coming to you live from the Beyond Hope Conference, the second Hackers on Planet Earth event taking place this weekend in conjunction with the Hacking in Progress conference over there in Holland. Now, is that them on the screen, or is that just us?
That's just us
looking at ourselves. Okay, because we were looking at ourselves from Holland before, and we were all delayed and jerky and that kind of thing. Are they looking at us now at all? They're not. They've gone to sleep? Okay. Well, we're still being broadcasted all around the world via Real Audio. If you connect to www.notwork.net, N-O-T-W-O-R-K.net, you will be able to connect via Real Audio and listen to the show that way. Of course, if you're listening to me say that, then you probably can listen on the radio, and you shouldn't tie up the bandwidth by listening on the computer as well. But maybe you could call your aunt in Peoria or something and tell her and show up the thrill of a lifetime. Yes, we are talking with, we've got Bernie S. here, Fiber Optic, and Steve Rombaum from, is there a company name we could say you're from, or are you just pretty much on your own?
There's a company.
But you don't want us to say
Pelorium.
Sorry?
Pelorium.
Okay. And tell us, how can we keep our privacy with people like you out there?
I'm not too sure you can.
Really?
We take advantage of databases that are built by powers much greater than ourselves.